Serious Money with Claire Barrett, personal finance and FT money editor at the Financial Times.
You're listening to Share Radio with me, Steve Clark. It's that time of the afternoon when we preview the pages of the Financial Times' weekend supplement, money supplement, I should say, with Claire Barrett, the editor of FT Money. Good afternoon to you, Claire. Thanks very much for coming on. And we're going to kick off with how to understand PCP car financing deals. Now, I'm always very vague on these deals myself, so I wasn't quite sure what it was. But there are some traps in PCP financing, which your guys are kind of pointing out.
Yeah, so we've got two pieces in FT Money this weekend about PCP. The first, which is more of a kind of philosophical piece written by Jonathan Ely, who's the deputy head of the Lex column and, as you know, used to edit the money section before I did. Indeed, he used to be my boss when we were both on the Investors Chronicle. This is something that he's noticed is forming more and more of a part of our everyday lives. Now, buying a car is one of the biggest purchases other than buying a house that we'll ever make. And it's quite staggering, really, that 80% of new cars are bought on this form of finance called PCP, a personal contract plan, is what that stands for. And it's basically a way of leasing a new vehicle. You never actually own it. And it started at the premium end of the car market about a decade ago, partly because of the way that company cars were taxed. And now it's become really, really mainstream. So you typically take out a three-year contract, you're paying a monthly fee to hire your car. That may include other things like insurance in the cost. And then at the end of the deal, there's like a base level guaranteed of what the market value of the car you're buying, in inverted commas, will be. And you can use that value to upgrade and switch to another car or reduce your monthly payments. And because these deals roll into one another, you typically take out one and then take out another at the end. As the price of used cars has been quite static over the last 7 or 8 years, people who've been taking out these contracts have typically been able to upgrade without paying any extra cash at the end of the contract. But what Jonathan is getting into is how the sheer volume of used cars that's resulted from this increased purchasing power over the last decade is actually bringing the price of used vehicles down now. So this virtuous circle may not continue.
And you've got issues like, what's the value of diesel cars, given everything we're reading about them in terms of how environmentally friendly they are?
Well, yeah, indeed. And, the pollution concerns, as a cyclist in London, I have to say, I thoroughly support such measures. But if you look at things that happened after the financial crisis, I mean, the government basically stepped in to save the car manufacturing industry by introducing these scrappage schemes for older vehicles, which created massive demand for people to go out and get a new car. And then the prevalence of these financial contracts made it even easier for more and more people to obtain a new vehicle. I mean, you might notice driving up and down on the motorways, like how many brand new cars there are on the road. It's quite staggering.
I'm very jealous, actually. It's a long time since I've had a new vehicle.
So the Bank of England is also concerned by it. It reckons that these types of car loan finance 70% of new car leases in the UK, and it's making up an increasing proportion of consumer credit, which, as you know, is rising and rising and rising. So this piece that Jonathan's written looks at all of the angles, but then we've got another piece written by Faith Archer, the consumer journalist, which is looking into the nitty-gritty of understanding these contracts, if you've got one, because there's all kinds of weird terminology, like a balloon payment, sounds more like an airbag, doesn't it, which is the price that you can pay at the end of your lease term of several years, and actually own the car at the end of it. So lots to learn in there. And I have to say, it really opened my eyes to how popular this has become, even though most people in the office who have got cars on these contracts confessed, mild bewilderment. They didn't even really understand what they were signing up
for. Yes, well, we're so happy to get the new car, aren't we? We sign on the dotted line and don't always look at the details. I thought it was an interesting article. And last couple of cars I've sort of bought myself, but not new, so second hand. So this whole PCP thing was a bit of an eye opener for me. But now I understand why people are driving all these new cars. But I'm a bit worried about what happens to us diesel owners, environmentally unfriendly as we are, and whether, will there be scrappage from that, if...
Also, investors will find this of interest, of course, because the share prices of the car dealers, John, such as Pendragon, Lookers, and Inchcape, have done really, really well over the, what's happened over the last 5 years, because people have been buying more and more cars. But if that situation goes into reverse, no motoring pun intended, then they're volume businesses, so a drop in the number of new car sales would reduce their revenue too. So lots to think about.
Yeah, and then you've got electric cars coming on as well. Let's move on to the next story, which is written by Merrin Somerset Webb, saying stocks may stay overpriced for a while, but then she says, but not forever. Is that what the headline says? So it's looking really, I guess, about what's happening in the stock market now, where we've seen that US surge in stocks come off the boil a bit, may not be helped this afternoon by the vote on Obamacare. Just take us through that.
Yeah, so, I mean, Merrin is a great voice to hear writing about the markets. I mean, we're looking here not just at the UK markets, but as you say, the US. I mean, the S&P 500 index in the US has risen nearly 80% in the last 5 years, even though earnings per share, which she argues should be the real driver of share prices, have risen by only a fraction of that amount, at 9%. So the PE ratio, the price-earnings ratio, is now 25 times for that whole index, which she says is scarily close to the long-term average, and various academic ways of measuring stock market performance suggest, that we would be due a correction. And she also looks at the FTSE 100 and the FTSE 250, which have both hit new highs in the past few weeks, describing the PE that the FTSE 100 is on of 30 times currently as silly. Indeed. And so where she gets to the crux of her argument is how worried everyone has become about this small wobble in the markets this week. I mean, the S&P 500 fell more than 1% for the first time in 109 days, and, the reaction of the world's media was substantial. I mean, for such a small fall, you might think people were over-egging it, but others have argued this marks the beginning of the end of the great post-crisis bull market, which is now the third best and the third longest on record in the US. And it's really been the first, it's coincided with the first test of Mr. Trump's powers as the US president. As you say, the Obamacare, he's had trouble with that bill in Congress. We still don't know how it's going to pan out, and people are reading into that.
It's rather curious that it makes you wonder, what the reaction could be on Monday, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, the markets obviously in the US had soared after his election. People were anticipating that tax cuts and looser financial regulation would feed through to bigger profits on corporate balance sheets. So is this an indication of what's come over there? Well, she goes into the forensics of this in her column, and also relates it back to what's going on in the UK, because of course there are plenty of investors over here who are also worried that markets are unnaturally high, although slightly different factors at play, with the strong dollar linked to sterling coming through in the form of higher dividends. But nevertheless, our readers are clearly worried about the UK market looking rather poppy as well.
Yeah, it's a very interesting article. If you've got money in the market, well worth reading. We've got a couple of minutes just to go on to your final choice for the day, which is tax-free childcare could save thousands. But it's, you say the headline, but it's not child's play. That's a good one. But it's really around this HM Revenue Customs unveiling a new website, which tells people who need childcare sort of what their options are.
Yeah, and you might say, why is the FT writing about this issue of tax-free childcare, as it sounds like a benefit that should only be entitled to people who don't earn very much money? Well, the thing that might surprise you is that you can actually, and a couple can both earn £99,999 a year each and still be entitled to quite substantial support from the government.
That is amazing, actually. It's a bit like child benefit, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a much higher threshold than child benefit. If one of you earns more than £100,000, then you cannot claim it. But if you both earn less than that amount, then you can, providing both of you work a minimum of 16 hours a week, you can get the sense from all of these rules that I'm rattling off is that it's quite a hard thing for parents to understand, which is why FT Money has decided to launch a new monthly column called Family Money, written by my wonderful colleague Lucy Warwick-Ching, who is a very experienced FT journalist and is also the mother of two young children, so understands the pressures of having to find out information about these schemes. And it's a really, really detailed breakdown. We've made it free to read online, ft.com/money, to give readers a taste of the kind of expertise we can offer all of them, not just the men in their 50s and pinstripe suits. And if you read her article, it will give you a really good idea of the things that you can claim for. And yes, you know, these can potentially be worth thousands of pounds per child per year if you start to claim them. The scheme starts to be rolled out from next month, tax-free childcare.
Okay, so this is all from your new family-friendly FT then. We can say that, can we, going forward?
Yes, absolutely. We're keen to get more female readers. It's you know, an ambition of the editor. And women all too often run the finances within a household, I know from experience. So we're not excluding men, but we're saying, you know, there's more to looking after your money and your family budget than merely saving and investing. It should form a part of our remit too, as a financial newspaper of record.
Okay, Claire Barrett, editor of FT Money, thank you very much for that and your insights into what's coming up into the Financial Times' weekend money supplement. More on PCP car financing deals, a way of financing a car deal. Stocks may stay overpriced for a while, writes Merrin Somerset Webb, and tax-free childcare could save thousands, but it's not child's play. And that's all in the Financial Times weekend money supplement this weekend.
Serious Money with Claire Barrett, personal finance and FT Money editor at the Financial Times.